Learn More, sponsored by the Institut International de Lancy, an education for life. IIL.
We are here for Learn More, our show all about education and families. And today we're talking about siblings. We'll be talking about sibling stereotypes predominantly and whether there is any truth to any of the stereotypes about first, second, third children in a family, or maybe more if you've got a really big family. And helping me tackle this is Dr. Rebecca Weber, child psychologist in Geneva. So, Rebecca, what are some of those stereotypes? First of all, what are we dealing with?
Yes. So, of course, this is not going to be the case for every family, but some of the stereotypes do hold true that a firstborn child is more likely to have leadership qualities, the capacity, for example, to take on responsibilities, which could or not include looking after siblings. They may be more of a perfectionist type. And the second-born child or a middle child is more likely to be a better negotiator, perhaps more competitive, and maybe even rebellious than the firstborn. And then in a kind of stereotypical way, a youngest child may crave the spotlight and they might adopt behavior such as rule breaking or humor in order to obtain that spotlight. They may also work harder to make themselves different than their older siblings.
We're going to go through some more examples of how this might manifest a little bit later on and also look at only children as well.
Exactly. Yeah.
But Rebecca, would you say in your experience as a psychologist, as a child psychologist for many, many years, is there any truth to any of these stereotypes?
Well, in fact, what is most helpful to think about is what are the different variables that are at play that might lead up to some of these stereotypes? So one variable that's very essential, that's often left out of the picture, is the parent's own history, their own experience as a sibling or as an only child. So it's really helpful to think about how the parents are bringing their own experiences to the table in the way that their own children are interacting with one another, both so, between parent and child and between the children themselves.
So, okay, so if you have a parent who, for example, is a firstborn, how will that then affect their child's tendencies or the firstborn child's tendencies?
Right. That means that the parent who was themselves a firstborn might then more kind of implicitly relate to their firstborn child and therefore defend or protect the firstborn and their need for autonomy and space and privacy from those very annoying little siblings, especially if that parent was expected as a firstborn to take on responsibilities of caretaking those younger little siblings. So they might quite be protective and less aware of the younger siblings' experience.
And so by that respect, then a parent who is themselves the youngest in a large family might then struggle to relate, I guess, to the firstborn and understand their need for a bit of independence.
Exactly. And they might also implicitly work harder to push their eldest child to include the youngest, especially if as a parent, when they were themselves the youngest child, they felt excluded or regularly, you know, pushed out and shunned by those older siblings, then they might be kind of protective or defensive of the youngest child in their own family.
So what you're essentially saying is that our experiences as adults can very much influence how we raise our own children.
Absolutely. And this does include our blind spots. So the aspects of our own histories and the way in which we're behaving that influence the way in which we're behaving today that we are not able to necessarily see. We might be behaving through a lens that is not actually visible to us. And that's where, you know, working with a psychotherapist or psychologist is really useful.
But for parents as well as the children, it seems.
Exactly, yeah.
But following on from a parent's own history, what are the other, would you say, main variables that influence the tendencies that different kids in a different birth order might have?
Yeah, so another significant variable is sibling rivalry. Now, it's kind of painful to admit, but sibling rivalry is part of life. It really exists. Siblings compete. And we can ask ourselves, what is it that siblings are competing for? Mommy and daddy love each of them equally. In fact, it's parental resources in the form of attention and time are limited by nature of time. Therefore, siblings will compete for those resources just by fact that they're limited.
Is it hopeless? Can we overcome this?
No, I think that the more we are aware that there can be ambivalence, there can be love and hate between siblings, that there can be rivalry, it is a natural human experience, the more we are prepared to take on these moments, which are not very nice, they're not very fun. Therefore, we can, you know, be a little bit more prepared rather than blindsided by them.
Because, how are we talking? How does it play out, essentially?
Yes, the lovely acts of bickering and fighting and aggression that happen in everyday life. The fun stuff.
Yeah, do you think that then sibling rivalry can be based on birth order?
No, not necessarily, because siblings will tend to differentiate from one another in order to circumvent that very rivalry. So it doesn't necessarily mean there's the first, second, third, fourth, et cetera, et cetera. It's more the dynamics at play between the siblings and with the parents.
But it sounds like the different personalities can really impact on the others, depending on what order they fall in and whether you have a very competitive second born.
Yes, of course. Of course, absolutely. We have to keep in mind that sibling relationship is the oldest human relationship that we will ever know, which means that you share both childhood and adulthood with siblings exclusively. We don't share childhood with our chosen partners, for example, or our colleagues. And our children and our children when we're adults. So it's a relationship that has as much impact on us as the parent-child relationship. So it's actually much more central to our emotional and therefore behavioral experience than we often realize.
Oh, that's so interesting. Okay, so we're going to be talking as well about whether there is a real difference with the number of years between children, how that affects birth order stereotypes, and whether there is an ideal number of years between children. Like, is it great to have 2 years between them, 3 years? Maybe if you wait for 5 years between them, then the oldest one can start helping with the nappies. Who knows? We'll talk to you more about this. Rebecca, stay tuned.
Learn more. Sponsored by the Institut International de Lancy. An education for life at IIL.
Our show this morning, talking siblings. Dr. Rebecca Weber is here to talk to us about that. We've already chatted about the stereotypes of the first, second, third, fourth sibling. We'll get more into detail about that as well. But I would love to know if there is such a thing as the ideal age or the ideal spacing between children, Rebecca. Should we be aiming for, say, 1.5 years between kids or 5 years between kids? Is there such a thing?
So no, there's not such a thing as an ideal number of years between children. Also, a lot of parents don't have control over when they have children, whether they are faced with fertility issues or they're undergoing the process of adoption or they are experiencing unplanned pregnancies. I mean, one thing that we can keep in mind is a lot of parents, you know, when they have a first child, they're kind of in babydom, and having another child, if they want to have more children, while still kind of connected in the baby world, because outside of, once you move beyond baby world and into kind of school world, it's kind of a different bag of tricks. So a lot of parents tend to try to kind of group them together, but there is no ideal. Something that we can keep in mind is that children born 5 years apart can be considered serial-only children.
Oh, so in that case, you would almost throw out everything that we're talking about in terms of the first, second, third.
Right, exactly.
And just go straight to, you would have perpetually only children tendencies.
We speak about serial-only children because they are not necessarily competing for attention and those parental resources that we mentioned, because they're not necessarily overlapping. If you like, a little baby needs help carrying out very basic needs, such as eating or learning how to sit up. Whereas if they have an older sibling who's in school, they need help with their homework and getting their backpack ready for school in the morning. It's totally different.
Wildly different. What about kids that are born very, very close together?
Right. So children born within the 16 to 18 months spacing range tend to function more like multiples, which means twins or triplets, for example. Then what we see is a kind of variation of falling into those common patterns of firstborn, secondborn, where there's going to be more emphasis on sibling rivalry because the parents' attention is limited.
When we talk about this, just if we talk about siblings that are twins.
Yeah.
Do these first, second born tendencies still go into play if they were born like a minute apart?
Right. So actually, interestingly, when there are twins or triplets, often in the way that parents speak about their children, they often attribute a kind of firstborn quality, like they will usually attribute, oh, this one was born a minute first or earlier, and this one was louder or bigger. If you like, we can look at this through the lens of what is sibling rivalry. We talked about it's the kind of limited resources of parental attention, which means that when you have twins or triplets and those children are being born into the world already with those parents' attention being split, which is more like a second-born experience. When you're the first-born child, you are the exclusive child of that family to have had your parents' full attention or more of their attention.
For a certain amount of time, yeah.
Right, for perhaps a limited amount of time if they then had a second baby right away. But you are the only child that brought your parents from one side of the river of being an adult without children to the other side of the river, which you can never go back, which is being a parent. Yeah.
Okay. What about other factors, like if you have boys or girls?
Yeah. So gender is a significant variable which can increase or highlight, for example, sibling rivalry or attenuate it, if you like. What I mean by that is in a family of four kids, if the three older siblings are boys and then the fourth child is a girl, that fourth child is more likely to take on the attributes of a firstborn child. What I mean by that is by being the only girl in the family, she's going to have a kind of different position, for example, compared to three boys who might be very different from one another, but have something kind of similar in that they are three boys. That's very different than, let's say, a family of four where they are all of the same gender, four boys or four girls, where that fourth born is going to be more likely to take on common tendencies of a last born child.
Can't wait to hear what you have to say about only children, given that I am one, but we'll come back to that in a couple of minutes. Stay with us. It's Learn More.
An education for life. IIL.
Right, we are talking about siblings, and I need to say this now. I'm an only child, so I love listening to all of these sort of sibling dynamics and the little rivalry that comes up. I would just like to point out that we have two very different points of view in the studio now, because Rebecca, are you comfortable divulging
sure.
your family?
Yes, I'm just not an only child. I am one of four children. And I am the baby in the family.
You fall as the baby.
Yes.
Okay, so you are the fourth. Right.
I'm the fourth. Yes.
So let's talk about this. The size of the family. What kind of impact does that have on the stereotypes that we're talking about today, about whether you're going to have competitive kids or very funny kids because they're trying to get attention? Where does the size of the family fall in terms of how that affects personality?
Well, if we look at you and I, for example, you are born into a family that's composed of, let's imagine, two adults. Mm-hmm. And then you became three people, two adults with one child. And then I was born into a family which was comprised of two adults and three pre-existing children. So already the terrain, when you're speaking about being a middle child of a family of three kids, it's different than being a middle child in a family of six kids, for example. Younger children may get to experience more freedom earlier compared with an only child who's got, like, let's say, potentially more likelihood to have four eyeballs looking at them all the time.
Literally, just your parents are distracted. They've got other stuff going on.
Yeah. So this could aggravate, you know, fighting between siblings in the sense that why it feels so unfair. Why does younger sibling get to experience more freedom earlier than I did? And on the flip side of that coin, the younger child could say, it's so unfair, I don't get to do all those things that the older siblings already get to do, but that they are exposed to and they know that exist. So again, it goes back to this question of, you know, fighting and bickering and sibling rivalry.
A bit of the grass is always greener as well, I think. This makes so much sense at why I was so happy when we got a dog and then the dog was misbehaved and people weren't looking at me anymore. But what you're essentially saying is that you can have children with born into these different families. They just have even children born into the same family.
Yeah.
It's like they're being raised in two completely different families because their experiences will be so wildly different depending on where they fall.
Exactly. So something that we speak about in child psychology and the development of this kind of tendencies to have birth order stereotypes is a notion called shared environment. So children of the same family might have very different experiences within the same household. These differences can, in fact, be more impactful, research shows, than similarities that the children share. What I mean by this is that, for example, there can be kind of internal and external factors. An eldest child may have had more strict parents. That's a kind of more internal factor. Those parents might have been more perfectionistic about their own parenting style. Then there can be more kind of external factors, such as a change in country, move houses, change in social class, whether you like go down the social ladder or go up the social ladder. There can also be increases and decreases in stress. So these are a wide variety of ways ways in which children within the same family can, in fact, not have shared the same environment.
All right, this brings us to the almost little checklist that I would love to go through, though, about the stereotypes.
Sure.
So that as people are listening, they can think whether these do actually apply to them and their family. And as you're listening, I would love for you to write in. Please let me know if you think, yes, these stereotypes are true for you, or actually they couldn't be further. Would love to know. But let's run through. What is the kind of stereotype of, say, the firstborn child?
Yes. So again, these are stereotypes that may or may not resonate specifically with listeners, but this is looking at kind of broad scale statistics.
So broad.
Right. So firstborns, obviously, like we spoke about, are more likely to get all of the attention or more attention from those adult parents. They may be more worried or perfectionistic. They also tend to have more leadership qualities, especially if they are given or imposed, perhaps, the responsibilities of caretaking younger siblings, which we can talk about a little bit more later. Firstborns also tend to be more organized and goal-orientated. So they can resemble only children, also being more verbose. Their studies show that firstborn and only children are likely to be more verbal at an earlier age. Of course, this depends on for how long the firstborn is an only child.
It sounds like, though, we're talking that most of it's nurture over nature. Most of it is about the position that they're put in. Like, your parents might be stressing over details, for example, when you are the firstborn.
Sure. Being the parents of firstborn means that you're learning to become parents, which is a task that you have then integrated when you have a second child. You're not learning a whole lot of things for the first time. So you're, as parents, you're likely to kind of celebrate milestones, remember what those first words are. Maybe not all first parents do, but you're kind of more likely to have a larger amount of undivided time to that firstborn, like reading time. Let's say if you read books before you go to bed, maybe you read more books if you have only one child or your firstborn, and then you have to do several bedtimes. You don't have as much time.
Tell me about the secondborn or the middle children. What are the typical stereotypical tendencies?
Yes. Okay. So they are supposedly better negotiators, fighting for those limited resources. They have a tendency to be more socially orientated, to be able to make friends quite easily. Also, studies show that secondborns are more likely to be competitive. They could be more rebellious or risk-taking, which we could look at as a kind of attempt to seek attention as a way to also differentiate themselves from their elder sibling or their younger siblings. Also, on the flip side, they could be more go with the flow and laid back. That's going to be predicated on the parenting style. Are the parents less vigilant with them? Then they would be more likely to be more laid back, etc.
What about the rivalries between the first and the second born?
Yeah, so I mean, we have to imagine when you have a second-born child, the firstborn gets to adopt a new role, which is to like highlight and underscore the skills that they have as the elder one that their baby sibling does not yet know how to do. So that can be a source of pride and emphasize the love that is existing between the two siblings. But also, there's also the ambivalence. What I mean by that is the second-born has now taken up attention from the firstborn. So the firstborn might say, "Ooh, I'm excited. I get to be big sister, big brother, but can you please send that baby back to wherever they came from?" And that can really happen at the same time. So you kind of get responsibility, but you don't get to be the baby anymore.
All right. Talk to me about the baby, though. What about the baby or the youngest of the family? What kind of tendencies do they stereotypically have?
Right. Okay. So the last born children tend, they're born into a family in which the parents' resources is split from day one. So they might crave the spotlight, which they could use by adopting humor or being more transgressive, breaking rules. They have to work harder to differentiate themselves from their older siblings. They could be similar, as I mentioned about secondborns or middle children, more attention-seeking or laid-back, depending on how the parents are. Now, some parents for their little baby might be overindulgent, and other parents might be hyper-vigilant to kind of get it right. If they know this is their last baby, they might have some regrets from how they carried out their parenting from the previous children. So that will kind of influence, if you like, those last children and how they behave.
All right. And now I throw it back to our listeners now. Please tell us if these resonated with you. Are you one of the stereotype? Do you fall? How do you feel, Rebecca? Do you want to admit anything from that last little list?
Sure. I would say in terms of like this question of nurture versus nature, nature. I'd pick that back up and say that temperament, which we're going to speak about at some point in Kids in Mind show, temperament has a very large effect on the way in which we interact as siblings and with our parents. So I would say my temperament as an adaptable person was definitely highlighted as being the fourth born.
Still haven't got to talking about only children. Yeah. We'll get to that soon after the Swiss news at the bottom of the hour.
An education for life. IIL.
We are talking about siblings this morning, and Dr. Rebecca Weber is talking to us all about the different tendencies of different siblings. We're looking at some of the stereotypes about first, second, third kids, and I can't wait for this because now we're going to talk about only children, and I should probably say that that's me. Only child over here, Rebecca. Just so come on. I've heard all of these stereotypes all my life. So what are you going to tell me that was spoiled? Are you going to tell me that was spoiled? Go on, let's hear it. What about these tendencies that are typical or stereotypical, at least for only children?
Yes, let's say stereotypical rather than typical. So what we find
is
tendencies for only children are very similar to the firstborn children in that they are likely to be more skilled verbally at an earlier age than second, third, fourth, fifth born children.
Thank you.
Likely to be more academic. Likely to follow rules, be kind of on the perfectionistic side.
Oh, that's wild. That's quite true. Yep. But I feel like you're only giving me the positive ones right now. I feel like there's going to be a sandwich.
Let's go on to the perhaps more difficult ones. Some of the stereotypes or tendencies include perhaps struggle to engage socially with their peers, perhaps have few friendships or more limited or specific one-on-one friendships. And we can imagine an only child being more at ease in an adult world rather than being thrown into, you know, a child's world where there's several children already.
It is true. And I think it just in terms, again, going back to this whole nature or nurture, is that something that happens? Well, probably not. It's more of a nurture thing because I agree with you when you say things like getting on with adults more at ease in an adult world. I was like that as a kid, which was a great benefit as a kid, but now I'm just an adult and everyone expects that. But it was like that because you don't have, go off and play with your brother outside or go off and play with a sibling outside. You just got to become at ease with hanging out with your parents. And also hanging out
with yourself, of being able to enter into an imaginary world, which is very important, psychologically speaking, for children to be able to do that. So we want to be able to preserve that for a child who's got a lot of kids around, that they can also spend time by themselves and the pleasure of being alone.
It's all very well talking about some of these stereotypes.
Yeah.
But when it comes to what a parent can do with this information, what do we think what's the response? Once you know that the stereotype is a possibility based on this kind of order of siblings, then what's the advice to parents to be aware of?
So parents of only children, preschool age children, something that parents can do is to not overparent. And what I mean by that is also giving space for the child, like I talked about, just being able to kind of be in their own play world. It's really important to be able to give your child undivided attention, but you don't always have to be with your child. You can let them be. That also means providing them with the opportunity for out of family activities. And that could be like baby gym or, you know, music class or discovery climbing or whatever it is. For school age children, already school is a collective and therefore social environment, and that's already offering a huge amount of stimulation for only children. So those are aspects that parents can really support, is this bridge between like adult world at home and then social interaction, being a part of social group world at school.
Let's go through a little overall summary of some of the things that we have talked about, the variables and tendencies that affect that birth order.
Yeah, so we have to keep in mind that the parents' own history, whether they were an only child, if they were first, middle, you know, fourth, fifth, sixth, last born child, is going to have a big effect on how they perceive, interact, defend, protect their own children, whether they themselves have an only child or if they have multiple children. So birth order of the actual parent, the parent's own history affects the birth order of their children. That is an important variable that often is invisible to us.
And we talked about rivalry being quite normal in families.
Yes, we can really look at the sibling relationship as the perfect example of the ambivalence between love and hate, which is a very deep part of the human experience. So rivalry is normal. Siblings compete for
limited resource of parents' time and affection. And that doesn't mean that parents like one more than the other. However, siblings are going to differentiate from each other in order to reduce the tension around sibling rivalry. And we have different temperaments, which is part of the nature aspect of being a human. And parents will connect with temperaments of children that resemble their own.
Just going back to specifics, when you look at, for example, how a parent can reduce the rivalry, then how would you recommend that parents deal with that?
So in the first case, I would say by accepting that rivalry can exist, that we also can align ourselves based on our own histories and our own temperaments, and that might be uncomfortable or painful, but is also based on reality. If you yourself were a sportsman in a certain domain and you've got a child who loves that same sport, it's natural that you'll connect around that. So in terms of first accepting that reality, and then what you can really do is to treat your children as individuals. Try not to let discipline necessarily spill over all children. What I mean by that is if you have one child who transgresses a rule, that they receive the consequences for their own transgressions. That doesn't then mean, you know, child A misbehaved, children A, B, C, D also have to receive that same punishment. Another thing that parents can do is to not praise one child in order to try to better the behavior of another child. That will not work. That will only go to increase sibling rivalry. So you can, in fact, praise the child that is behaving in a way that's very satisfying for you and for them directly, rather than using that as a leverage towards another who's not behaving correctly.
What if you have, and I think we talked about this maybe being a characteristic of potentially of a younger sibling, of the youngest sibling, if you have somebody who maybe is sort of like a helpless or an underdog kind of role, they don't want to be part of the rival, they don't actually have that kind of competitive streak.
Right. I think there's a few things with the last born children tendency. One is that for parents who know this is your last baby, there's also a kind of grieving process. You're not going to be having any more of those babies after that. So there's a tendency to be like, you're
who
my
knows,
baby. and that means allowing the baby to become a big girl or a big boy and then a school age child and to grow into a kind of sense of autonomy and internal motivation that's very healthy for that child, that they don't have to remain in the baby phase in order to appease those parents. Something that parents can do is to not play up the kind of helpless or underdog role of the little baby who's a victim to their elder siblings. Because in fact, that tends to be an attention-seeking behavior, which is not going to necessarily help the baby. Something parents can do instead is to help that last child to gain specific skills rather than rescuing their poor, helpless little child.
And then we did also speak about whether or not there was a perfect perfect spacing. And I think we can both agree that as lovely as it would be to have that perfect spacing, human bodies don't always agree to it.
No, they don't. And there are some. Of course, there are parents who do say we want to have our children this many years apart, and they manage to do that, and that works for them. Biology works in their favor in that way, and then they can integrate the notion that rivalry can exist, differences between temperament and siblings exist, and that will help them then to apprehend any kind of tensions or conflicts, which is a natural part of being in a family.
It's a fascinating look at the psychology of children, the siblings, and the different rivalries and different traits that they might have, and the kind of nurture that kind of brings those about. But also, Rebecca, thank you so much for the very practical what to be aware of as a parent to maybe deal with some of those things
and
better understand and identify with some of those rivalries traits that your kids might have. Thank you so much for this wonderful and very informative episode of Learn More. Dr. Rebecca Weber, child psychologist in Geneva, thanks for your time.
Thank you.
Learn More, sponsored by the Institut International de Lancy, an education for life at IIL.